I like to play my music and sing my song.
My song.
Dance to the music. I wanna hear it all night long. When I go
dancing,
I like to groove to the beat. Everybody party. Come on, let's feel the body heat.
And Larry Dixon, welcome to England. Thank you very much for agreeing to do a radio interview. We've just been listening to one of your tracks that was really, really popular in the 80s, Dance to the Beat, taken from the LP Can't Price Love. Great track.
Yes, it's a pleasure to have done that track with my wonderful backup band, Charles Parks III and the High Society Players.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great.
And so, doing everything from the south side of Chicago.
Lovely sound, lovely sound. There was an awful lot of stuff came out of Chicago. It's been long known for producing great quality music. So tell me where it all started for you, Larry.
It all started for me with my older brother getting me interested in music. My brother Tyrone Dixon,
mm-hmm.
He would play records for me, and he played this record by the Drifters.
Right.
And they had this song called Up on the Roof.
Oh, yes, I remember that very well, yeah.
And he would dance and sing to it, and I would sing with him. And we were living in Augil Garden in Chicago South Side at the time. Then we moved into the city, to the Inglewood neighborhood.
All right.
And while we were there in the Inglewood neighborhood, he started playing this record by this group called the Delphonics, He Don't Really Love You.
Mm-hmm.
And he was showing me how to sing and stand, and I would dance with him and sing. He was trying to keep his little brother occupied.
Great. And how old were you then?
Oh, I had to be like, at that time I was 7 years old. I was turning 8 that year.
Ah, great stuff. Great stuff. So, obviously, you got, were you from a musical family? I think you were from a big family,
yes,
weren't you?
Yes, my mother played piano, and I started tinkering with the piano when I was 5. And I've had my other siblings, my brother Melvin, which was also in a couple of groups of mine. He's one of the original Soulful Spades.
Right.
He played the drums. And my brother Lamont and my brother Kenner, they played the chimes, the bongos, and they also played the drums.
Mm-hmm.
And my sisters, they sang also. They did a lot of background vocals with us while we were growing up. We had a musical household.
Lovely, lovely. And you formed yourselves into a little group as well, didn't you? And played parties and things?
At one time, yes. As children, we had this group called the 73rd Street Ghetto Kids.
Uh-huh.
And we would play at parties, and sometimes they would pay us by giving us food. Sometimes we made $20. I thought, $20? I thought, I can make money doing this.
Yeah, millionaire. Well, that would have been a lot of money in back in the day, especially for kids.
Oh, right. So we did that, and we were at that time we were in the Inglewood neighborhood, kind of right outside it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And we would just kind of walk around. We would carry our instruments, you know, to where we were going to all the different little parties and. It was real good. The first party we went to, James Hilliard, he was with me. He started out as one of the 73rd Street Ghetto Kids,
mm-hmm.
as well as being one of the explanations later down the road, the group that I had before I went solo.
Yeah, yeah.
And he had set it up for the first party, and later through the years, he was the one that had us to go to the radio station WVON in Chicago.
Yes, I'm aware of that one.
That was the station that was started by Leonard and Philip Chess of the Chess.
Yes, of course, Chess label, right? Yeah, and Checker.
And we have won a verbal contract on the radio due to James C. Bless it. So he passed away last year.
Oh dear.
And this guy Willie Moore came out to see us. And he happened to be the cousin to this guy, Jerry Murray, which his stage name was
Jerry-O. Yes.
And he had made this record called Karate Boogaloo.
Yes, I know it, yeah.
Yes, and he had recorded that with the Funk Brothers. He started a label, so he also had us doing background vocals until this guy, Larry Higgins, joined with us. And they were going to record us, but we ended up eventually breaking away later down the road.
Right. And is that how you came to release the track under the Soulful Spades?
Well, that came right after what I just mentioned, after we broke up. My brother Melvin left the explanation. He went with this other group playing the drums with the Soulful Spades, which was Johnny Knight, lead singer. He played congos, bongos.
Right.
And you had the two Walton brothers, Gary Walton, which played the bass, and he sang. And Michael Walton, which sang, he sang lead a lot, and he played lead guitar. And my brother Melvin was playing the drums. Every now and then, I would sit in with them and play the piano in the background just for extra added sound.
Mm-hmm.
And they were a group. I was actually a solo act.
Okay.
And when Johnny Knight left, he eventually passed away. I stood in, and I had took them with me. I wrote a song with Michael Walton called Next Time.
Uh-huh.
And at that time, we went to the International Recording Studio. As a kid, I did the same thing. You know, sung at a few parties and things, worked a little job, saved my money. And I had went to the International Recording Studio.
Mm-hmm.
But by then, I was with a wonderful gentleman by the name of Frank Lewis. He had a record label called Square Deal Records.
Right.
And yeah, I was reading a book that he had wrote, and he and I was talking, and he took me under his wing to show me how to be an independent label.
Right. Well, that's. We'll talk about that in a moment. First off, I want to carry on talking about your first release and the fact that it got pressed with the wrong vocal mix, didn't it?
Yes, it did. I did a scrap vocal for the track, you know, because I was a little nervous my first time.
Yeah,
and
of course.
Then I redid it and did a second track. And the first scrap vocal was mixed. They both were mixed down, but it was mixed to be pressed, and they grabbed the wrong tape when it was time to press the record.
Right.
And I didn't want it out like that, but I ended up selling so many copies. Really, no one really knows. I almost sold all of them eventually.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want it to be out. I wasn't really trying to push it. And the new track didn't come out till recently, when I just recently did a reissue of my catalog. Early years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that's out now on a 45.
Yeah, but also you've done your all of your albums, and in fact all of your back catalog on a box set, haven't you?
Yes, I have a box set out right now for that. anyone interested in that, they can Google that with Steel Music and they'll see it online. They can purchase it, the albums, the box set, or the 45s. And plus, there's a CD version of that as well.
I say, because all of your output's been really quite collectible, isn't it?
Yes,
so,
it is.
Good, that should fly out the door. Anyway, I just want to play now this track. This is called The Next Time. First band, 73rd Street Ghetto Kids, and you come from a large family. I'm assuming that you were from an underprivileged area. Is that the case?
Yes, I was. Yes. Argyle Gardens was where most of the people would settle when they would come from the down south. My grandparents were from the south.
Right.
And so, down there in Gainesville, Georgia, in Winer, Georgia.
So, you must have seen an awful change, or not an awful, a really good change in culture and attitudes, especially like segregation. You mentioned in your write-up about being at school and being punished for talking to a white girl. I mean, that's it's just unimaginable in today's society.
Yes, that was during the 60s, the early 60s, and it was something else during it. You had all of the demonstrating going on. Martin Luther King, he even came to town, and I remember he bought my younger brother Kenneth and my youngest sister Valerie, bought them ice cream cones while he was giving a speech.
Wow, fantastic.
And that was also in the Inglewood neighborhood that's famously talked about in Chicago. It's a rough area.
Yeah, yeah.
At that time, part of the neighborhood, the school I went to was being segregated with black people. With the blacks and the minorities going to the school.
Yeah. Oh, dear.
And I was, for just talking and socializing, the teacher told me I wasn't allowed to do that. That's just something that burns in the back of my mind to this day.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, to be fair, I can't imagine what it was like, because thankfully we live in a different age. So, please, that's all behind us. And tell me, you're in an underdeprived area, and so gangs, How? I mean, that's where gang life thrives. How did you manage to avoid being caught up in that? Because I know in New York, famously, the Voices of East Harlem were a youth project set up to distract the youth from going into gang culture and the other darker sides of life. To great success. How did you manage to avoid being dragged into that?
Well, when I started approaching the teen years between 12, 13, all the way up to the age of 19, and when school would be out, I would spend every summer at my grandmother's house to help her out and everything, and unfortunately my other brothers didn't.
Right.
And then when school was in, I was mostly going to school and coming straight home, and I had little association with the neighborhood guys and the gang. But when I did take up with them at some time, I did run with them for a bit, for a couple of years, and I had a small brush with them, with some of the top gang members in Chicago. And just so happened, the guy, James Hilliard, same thing with him. We were kind of like best friends at the time.
Right.
And he had family members that were in one gang, and we were around another gang, so I call myself being in both gangs. I was able to go everywhere that the average person couldn't go.
Right, I see.
And back in those days, you had like the Blackstone Ranger and the Disciples, but at that particular time, the Blackstone Ranger was the largest gang. They're just as equal today in the city where you have the Crips and the Bloods. They were the same. It's just the opposite of the names now,
right.
You know, but that's about the same equal.
Right.
And after those 2 years, I poured out, and music kind of saved my life. And I just kept really pushing at it, and I started going around Record Row in Chicago, you know, the same street that the Chess Records was on,
mm-hmm.
after I got exposed to that area.
Yeah. Lovely. And then you went into the Army then?
Yes, I did.
That must have been a brave step, because that was the height of the Vietnam War, wasn't it?
It was the tail end of it, actually,
right.
When I went, because they had started a lottery where they wouldn't take all the guys that were born in the same year. Eventually, I joined because my mother evicted me out of the house.
All right.
Due to so many siblings being in, they needed to sleep in there. I was taking up space.
Okay.
And she let me stay for a while. I had to come out of the bedroom, so she had two sofas in the living room, so one of them was kind of pushed away from the wall. I slept behind the sofa for 4 months, then I went into the armed service myself.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. So that must have, did you carry on writing while you were in the Army? What sort of places were you based? Did you get much time to yourself?
I was mostly based in the States, and I had a very difficult time because it was still racial in the Army as well. That was my second encounter, besides being in school, where the racial was.
Right.
And they called me the N-word.
Uh-huh.
And told me, when my sergeant had placed me in the ambulance, to take me to the clinic off the base. It was a sergeant driving, a lieutenant sitting on the next side, and, you know, I'm the patient in the back. And when they got away from the base after my sergeant placed me in the ambulance,
right,
I was told, with the N-word, get out and walk. I looked at him. I'm thinking, okay, I'm from Chicago. Should I bust him upside his head? But
sure.
I heard about Leavenworth, their lockup cage, and so their jail. So I just got out and walked.
Yeah, yeah.
And then after a while, a month or so later, I complained. Then I got transferred from Fort Knox, Kentucky, to Fort Harrison up in Indiana.
And did things improve?
And I complained some more there, right. And then eventually, I was just so sick of it being prejudice, I just really, I just left.
Yeah, just got out.
Then it was so bad after I left, that was called being AWOL, absent without leave.
Yeah.
Then I was coming back because life was so rough.
Yeah.
Then they decided that since I had complained, I was trying to find out was a way I could sue the government or the Army.
Uh-huh.
And they decided they would just rather let me out. They told me, wait a minute before you come back.
Yeah, yeah, good work.
And they sent me a letter and they dropped me from the rolls of the Army.
It sounds like I
had no choice but to go back to music.
Yeah, it sounds like you did the right thing, though, doesn't it? Draw a line under that. No need at all. So you went back to music and you released your first LP, I'm So In Love.
Yes.
Now
actually, just before that, I did a single. It was a song called You On Your Own.
All right. I don't know that one.
Because I was working with Hester Huff for a while.
Right.
I wrote 5 songs with her, but I didn't record them, unfortunately. She was a piano player, beautiful young lady.
Yeah.
And I had plans on marrying her, but I got kicked to the curb. So as they say in the slang, where I was kicked to the curb.
Oh, dear.
And eventually things took place where I moved on, but she always lived in my heart. And
yeah.
When I ran back into it, I found out we both were still in love, but I was married and she was married.
Yeah, so first loves are always tricky, aren't they?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes. So,
so when I did I'm So In Love with Elgin, I had a lot of recording equipment by then. I had like these 2 giant reel-to-reels and all kind of other little gadgets.
Uh-huh.
And I was doing a show at this club called The Copper Box.
Right.
And while I was at The Copper Box, I had set everything up, and I also had a movie camera to set up to record the whole performance.
Oh, right, like a live recording.
Right. And I had the soundtrack as well, which I was recording. And the lens was over the movie camera, so it never had gotten recorded.
Oh, no.
Recorded. But it was a special time because it was another group that my buddy Charles Parks III had played with them behind. His sister and his associates, they were in the group as well.
Right, and they went on to be your backing group, didn't they? And also record for you on your label, which we'll talk about in a moment. But first, from that LP, I'm So In Love, we're going to play a single release. This is called Star Time. So, Larry, tell me about the Copper Box, because that was quite a jumping venue from what I can gather, wasn't it? It was the place to be.
Yes, it's located on the south side of Chicago. They had 2 locations, and the 2, they would always go by there first name, their club name,
yeah.
ran by the guy Woody and the other guy Chris. They were buddies.
Right.
And I had made friends with them, and I would always frequent the club. Next thing I know, I was showcasing my records there before they were released to see how the crowd would respond to them.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I did the live show as well when I did I Am So In Love.
Right. But of course, you were also holding down a full-time job as well, weren't you? I mean,
oh, yes.
gigging as well as working during the day. When did you sleep?
Well, actually, I would work in 8 months out of a year, I would work, and the other 4 months I would do music.
Right.
Because I got a job at this place called the Essex Hotel.
Uh-huh.
And I got the job from being in one of their commercials that they would advertise throughout the hotel system. And so I had a job with them working in. That left me where I was able to do music the other 4 months. And I would just put everything, have my plans, my notes, and I would get down doing it with it, you know, plus with the help of Charles Parks III.
Yeah, yeah, Charles Parks III. Now, and the High Society Players, they signed to your label, or at least released on your label, didn't they? Your
yes.
LAD Productions, you set that up in
yes.
late 70s?
Yes.
Good stuff.
Mostly through the 80s. I met them in 1979 after I came out of the armed services.
Mm-hmm.
And we hooked up and we started socializing, and I would go out and listen to the band, listen to the group, and then we started writing a few songs together. Then, you know, they got behind me on writing a song I wrote called Star Time.
Yeah.
Lovely. And from there, they played on me with You On Your Own, and then they worked with me ever since on any other material I was doing.
Lovely. Well, the track I want to play by Charles Parks and the High Society Players is Groove It All Night, and that's coming up next.
1, 2, 3, 4.
While the people do their thing, the music is what the people came to hear. So they groove and shake while they played in their ears.
The night is right, the music's tight, the ladies nice, we gonna groove it all night. The night is right, uh-huh. The music's tight, uh-huh. Yeah, the ladies nice, we gonna groove it all night.
Gonna let the people get down. It's a great night all around, yeah. While the music is played along, the DJ will play his song till we sing along, yeah.
The night is right, the music's tight, the ladies nice, we gonna groove it all night. The night is right, uh-huh. The music's tight, uh-huh. Yeah, the ladies nice, we gonna groove it all night.
We got to party, we wanna party, so move your body and party hardy.
Yeah.
The people's moving, so let's be grooving and don't stop moving. We never ever wanna stop.
Tonight is right, the music's tight, the ladies nice, we gonna groove it all night.
The night is right. Whoa, the music's tight. The lady's nice. We gonna groove it all night. The night is right. The music's tight. The lady's nice. We gonna groove it all night. The night is right. The music's tight. The lady's nice. We gonna groove it all night. The night is right. Uh-huh. The music's tight.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, the lady's nice. We gonna groove it all night. The night is right. The music's tight. The lady's nice. We gonna groove it all night. The night is right. The music's tight.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, the lady's nice. We gonna groove it all night.
There we go then, there's
the sound of Larry Dixon and I'm So In Love. Before that,
Charles Parks III and the High Society Players and a great track, Groove It All Night, brought out on LAD Productions label, Larry Dixon's very own record label. Larry, great track. Great, because of course you were executive producer on that as well, weren't you?
Oh, yes.
Lovely. So, you went on, you'd released your first LP, you went on to release a second in 1984.
Yes, that was Camp Price Love.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I did all of the work again with Charles Parks III. And also one of my musical relatives, a guy named Charlie Hosh Jr., stage name Chuggalug, he was working with Earth, Wind & Fire Productions.
All right.
Behind the Emotion, he had just played on their last two albums, and I had him to come out to assist me, and I wanted to write a couple of songs because his style was like a killer groove style on the bass.
Yeah.
Real pure funk. So
lovely.
I wanted to do two songs with him, and I did that outside of the norm. I wanted kind of a different sound other than high society players playing behind me.
Right, so that was 1984. What's happened in the intervening years? Did you sort of get back into industry? Have you still been writing?
Yes. I was still writing, and I had completed that particular album, the Camp Price Love album, by I was actually still working with Charles Parks III, mm-hmm. and I was working with Chuggalug. I did a few singles, Love in Your Heart, Love Has Come Back, because I'd already wrote the song Wait For Me and Camp Price Love, the title song mm-hmm. to the album. And I was trying to mix up what I do. I don't try to go for one sound.
No, of course not.
And I completed that. And the early part, most of my music was from, actually dating back from 1971 through all the way to 1987. And after, because the last one I did working outside of my production with someone was my cousin Chuggalug. I did on Saturday night.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a single, good single there too, which I had. It featured on a lot of the local radio stations, that mostly the college station would play my music. I knocked on so many doors, and I was getting good guidance at the time by a promoter, the Eddie Thomas.
Right.
With his distributing, you know, Dogs of War distributing.
Mm-hmm.
And I also had guidance with my good buddy Carl Davis with the Brunswick Records.
Yes.
And Lee Simmons.
Yeah, I mean, Carl Davis was really big throughout the soul scene, throughout the 60s and 70s and beyond, wasn't he? He's a big name in the industry, yeah.
Good guy. He showed me a lot, and I really appreciate it. And so many of the associates that worked under him that became friend of mine, like my good buddy Robert Lester of the Shy Lights,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, he was called Squirrel, and he eventually he passed away. You know, I was one of the younger guys compared to most of those guys.
Yeah. So what are you doing now? I know you have released, or you're about to release, a track called Bleeding Heart, which we'll play in a little while. But have you got anything else up your sleeve? Have you got? Are you poised to issue some new material? Have you got anything on the horizon?
Well, actually, I'm working on a lot of material right now to be placed out and everything. I'm going to produce a young lady called Ebony Renee Death, and I'm going to put something out on her. But also, I had I have a back catalog of material I made from 1992 all the way up to now. I did gospel, I did pop jazz. I always try to mix it up, and then I have a lot of R&B pop soul mixed with between love songs and a little upbeat songs. So I'm kind of up to date. I mean, I have just as much material as my early catalog. So.
Well, I mean, I can't vouch for America, but I do know that in the UK and Europe, the people are really hungry for that sort of stuff. It's flying out. It's coming out on small independent labels, probably only presses of 250, 300, maybe 500 copies. But they're being snapped up.
Yes.
Stuff that wasn't released in the 70s, but, you know, recorded in the 70s, even through to stuff that's contemporary today and still got that retro sort of soulful 70s sound. So I'm sure that the time is right for you to start putting lots and lots of stuff out. Let's air some of these tracks that you've been keeping to yourself.
Yes, I'm making plans to release a lot of it now. I gave people a slight insight. If they Google myself and go to YouTube, they can hear a lot of the newest stuff that I put out there, just to give people a taste that I still got it and I can still do it good.
Right, so I know a few people in the record industry, and if any of them are listening to this show, how would they then get in touch with you regarding possibly putting some of your material out for you across in the UK? Do you have a website?
Well, I have, basically right now I'm basically on Facebook, and I could either be emailed or they can just Google my name, and anything with Steel Music, they can leave a message with comments, and they'll be able to get in touch with me that way as well.
Splendid. And likewise, just to reiterate that you do have this back catalogue box set, complete box set of all your back catalogue. That's available for purchase now, isn't it? On places like CD Baby, perhaps?
They can get it not on CD. They would still have to go through Steel Music. Again, the best thing to do is just Google Star Time Larry Dixon.
Lovely. Lovely. Well, Larry, thank you very much for giving up your time today. Thank you very much for talking to us and giving us an insight into your very interesting life. Congratulations on the music you've put out, and I'm really eagerly awaiting the stuff that we've not heard yet. And likewise, this young singer that you're going to be producing, send her along and let's have a listen to her stuff as well. If I can help, then I will.
Really appreciate you.
You're very welcome.
I want to thank everyone for appreciating my music. My catalog is out now, and any future endeavors that I plan on putting out, that will be coming out soon between now and before the summer of 2019.
Great. Larry Dixon, thank you very much for joining me. We're going to play out now with the forthcoming track from Larry. This is called Bleeding Heart.
Some say the best things in life are free. But I know when it comes down